even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, bringing you the best of my Times Radio show. Tune in Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. Well, when Times Radio launched about a month ago, we carried out a focus group to see what swing voters were saying. So in today's episode, we've carried out another one to see if there's been any change in the public mood. Now, this is apparently a government run by focus groups, spending record amounts on opinion polling to find out what you think. So what is Downing Street being told? To find out here on Times Radio Mid-Mornings, we have our very own focus group, regularly carried out by polling firm Kext CNC. The man in the hot seat asking the questions is James Johnson, who used to carry out exactly these sorts of focus groups for Downing Street. Morning, James.
Morning.
Just to explain, because I've been tweeting about this session coming up, people have been saying, oh, what's the point? How do we know who these people are? How are they selected? What can we possibly learn from six random people? So just explain how this works and the value of focus groups.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not a substitute for an opinion poll. So it's not designed to be nationally representative, but it is designed to allow politicians, to allow political parties and companies to work out actually how people are talking and thinking about things. So we'll go out and we'll recruit 6 to 8 people who sort of match our recruitment of people we're really interested in. Now, in this case, we looked at swing voters. So half of them voted Labour in December, half of them voted Conservative, who are now undecided across England. So we'll go out, we'll find those people, recruit them, and then really get their views. So, yeah, not nationally representative, but there to really dig into those specific groups of people that are actually hard to reach in conventional polling.
And also, you've been doing this for long enough, and I've spoken to other people who've worked in politics for many years as well. They have a value because sometimes one person, a focus group, really puts their finger on something. You know, there's lots of talk that Get Brexit Done was born out of a focus group. Strong and Stable was something which got sort of looped back from focus groups as well. So there is a value to them. In our first focus group last month, the swing voters we spoke to then were still pretty supportive of Boris Johnson, and thought he was doing a good job in difficult circumstances while Keir Starmer was still to make his mark. In this month's focus group, we'll hear from Sam, who's an IT analyst from Derbyshire, Ian, a retired business consultant from Berkshire, Paul, a retired sub-postmaster from Nottinghamshire, Kathy, a nursery manager in Berkshire, Joe, a recently graduated student in York, Louise, who works for the NHS in Yorkshire, and Leon, a personal trainer from Manchester. So there's a broad range of jobs and geography and ages as well. OK, let's start with how they think Boris Johnson is doing.
Time will tell. I think he's going to be judged in 2 years' time, 3 years' time.
Not very well. Not very well, but I don't know. I just feel sorry for him, actually. But yeah, he's not doing great at the minute.
I wouldn't like to be in his shoes, but I don't think... I don't think he's acting as a great figurehead, really, because he never seems to have his hands on the detail. But I think I'm fingers crossed that the people behind him are better than he is.
He's not doing a great job. I think he had the country's support at the start, but now people is saying that perhaps he's not the leader that we thought he was.
A bit too many mixed messages, I think.
I don't think he's been right since he got ill. He just looks shattered. He looks exhausted. He just looks ill.
I don't think he's doing well, but I don't think he's doing bad.
So, James, a bit of a mixed bag there, but possibly verging on the more negative. This hints at a bit of a shift, doesn't it, given all the focus groups you've done?
Yeah, and I think the thing really worth stressing here is that, you know, a lot of those voters had voted for Boris Johnson in December. So, you know, it's not like it was just the Labour voters saying that. It was a real mix, including those Conservative voters. Look, there's a big caveat to this. It's one focus group. Certainly when I was doing this job at 10 Downing Street, you know, you always had ups and downs. So we should definitely keep monitoring this over time, and we'll see obviously how that comes out in our future focus groups as well. But look, with that caveat aside, yes, it does seem to be a shift. And that is because what's really sort of interesting about that is that the things that the people were criticising, his sort of believability, presence, his strength, and we saw that come through quite a lot, actually are often the things that they used to really like about Boris Johnson. So when I was doing the focus groups through my own company in November, December, you know, around the time of the general election, those were the things they really liked, you know, this sense that Boris had this sort of force of presence, he had this believability, he had this oomph. And that seemed to be the thing that they were criticising. Now, that's important because, you know, that matters more. It's not just people sort of having a, you know, a bit of a go at Boris Johnson. It seems to be that those things they really liked are things they're getting less positive on. And, you know, that was a warning sign with Theresa May, right? You know, in the 2017 election, one of the things that people really liked about her was, you know, the fact she was seen as strong. And by the end, with that sort of, you know, tagline of weak and wobbly, that had really changed. And that took a really big hit to her brand. So it's early days. It's certainly salvageable. But that is a dangerous shift to have for a politician and maybe a sign of things to come.
Just while we've been talking, somebody's texted in pointing out, I said there was a broad range of geography, although everyone is in England. In part, that's because, particularly during coronavirus, so much of it is devolved. And we are hoping that we'll do one of these focus groups, particularly in Scotland, in the next month or so. So, yeah, we are aware. But, you know, if you had everyone shooting off in different directions, talking about Nicola Sturgeon and Mark Drakeford, it would become even more complicated. Now, interestingly, when you press them on exactly how the government was coping with coronavirus, there still seemed to be a willingness to give them the benefit of the doubt.
It's something that nobody's had to face before. It's something completely new. It's never happened before. So it's pretty difficult. You act on instinct, really, on instinct as things happen. I think they were slow in closing down. I think they've made a few mistakes earlier on.
I think they're doing the best they can in these circumstances. Nobody knows what's right or wrong at the minute, but it's just unprecedented times, as they keep telling us. And I'd hate to be in government shoes at this particular moment.
Yeah, once you were pressing them on the detail, James, of exactly what the government was doing, there was a recognition that this is just a really, really difficult time to be in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, from the government's point of view, you know, despite that sort of worst news on Boris Johnson, this will be something that clearly, you know, they'll be able to take comfort in. And this is something we've really seen since the start of the pandemic that really hasn't shifted at all. You know, this general benefit of the doubt, this general sense that, you know, look, things are really difficult. Anyone is really going to struggle with that. So clearly that does give them a bit of political cover. But yeah, that seems to be the view of the population as a whole.
Now then, you then asked them what they thought the government's main slogan was.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Go out, stay in,
wear a mask, don't wear a mask.
Stay 2 metres apart, stay 1 metre apart. See you, mate.
Well, because can anybody say why it's gone from 2 metres to 1 metre all of a sudden? What's the logic in that?
Yeah, but that wasn't great, was it? I mean, that's not getting the cut through of stay alert. Now, obviously, one of the big issues in today's news has been the question of reopening schools. Anne Longworth, Children's Commissioner for England, saying getting pupils back into lessons should be the priority, even if that ends up meaning shutting pubs and restaurants. James asked the focus group what they thought the priority should be: reopen schools or be allowed to meet friends and family indoors.
Reopen schools.
Well, that was pretty unanimous there, James.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this is the government clearly has, you know, very clear backing for their priority to reopen schools. I asked them as well, you know, as you heard there, you know, what that trade-off, you know, should be. You know, would they be happy if other restrictions had to come in, for example, on meeting people indoors? And really, the whole group, including, you know, people in the group who weren't parents, were really clear on that. They talked about the mental health impact on children. They talked about, you know, long-term impacts on children's education. I think, you know, really the government, you know, if it brings in other restrictions, if they need to bring in other restrictions to allow schools to open, it looks like they're going to have the public's backing on that.
There's also been this big question of a public inquiry and when it should be. You asked them, do we need to rake back over it all, or is it time to move on?
Move on, because holding an inquiry, it'll cost millions of pounds. For what? We're going to gain from that?
I agree with what Louise said, and for the same reasons. It'll take so long, and everyone will just blame everybody else.
Absolutely, we need to move on, but I think we need to learn from the mistakes that have been made.
Move on and learn from it.
I would personally have an inquiry, just so that if something like this happens again, you know, it could easily mutate, or we could have another pandemic of some sort.
I think we need to move on and just take some learning from it and some next steps forward.
Inquiry, so we can learn from mistakes.
A lot just wanted to move on, James. A sense they just want to get COVID done.
Yeah, well, I think you're onto something there. I think this is, again, you know, look, there was a bit of mixed views there, right? You know, there is a sense of get it done, but also the very people that are saying, you know, move on, are also saying, you know, let's learn the lessons. So, you know, there may well be, you know, some appetite for an inquiry there. But look, I think the important thing about this is that these sort of the historic handling of the pandemic from the government, you know, whether on care homes, PPE, testing. I think what's really clear is that, you know, Labour attacking heavily on that might not really cut through with those voters. It feels like they're going to be making their judgments on the Labour Party, on the Conservative Party, really on what they say, on what their vision of the country, in the future is, what they're going to do next, the future, not the past. And look, there may well be in there the makings of a get COVID done narrative that the government, if it wanted to, could fall back on and use, because I think you know, people are clearly getting fatigued by it and want to talk about the future, not just the past. That's obviously might be welcome news to the government, but clearly opens up quite a lot of questions for the Labour Party as well.
Okay, then let's move on to the opposition, as you brought them up. These are obviously swing voters. Some voted Labour last time, some voted Conservative last time. So let's hear what happened when you asked them about Keir Starmer.
Well, I think he's definitely more electable than Jeremy Corbyn was. He's shown leadership, he's handled himself well in Parliament when he's come up against Johnson. So I think perhaps he's one to look for the future.
I think when we did the elections way back when, I was unsure, so I can't remember who I voted for. I don't think I was to vote for Boris Johnson again. I don't think I would, because I don't trust him, but I'm indifferent of who I'd vote for.
I kind of agree there. I mean, I did vote for Boris Johnson because I hated Jeremy Corbyn, basically. Now, I'm a little bit unsure of where I'd go this time.
I'm very glad that he's there instead of Jeremy Corbyn, as others have said. But I don't know what he stands for. I don't really know. I didn't know what he stood for before, during the whole Brexit thing, and I don't know what he stands for now.
I have no opinion of Keir, what's his face. To be honest with you, I've got no confidence in Boris. I've got no confidence in any of them.
If you're still being called Keir What's-His-Face after 4 months in the job, is that a good sign, James?
Look, I mean, it's probably not. But, you know, look, Keir Starmer's got time, right? He's able to, you know, try and build up his profile. The key thing is he's got permission to be heard. And Corbyn never had that. And it's fascinating how, you know, the ghost of Corbyn, you know, clearly floats over these voters. And you know, Keir Starmer is almost gets a default brownie point for the fact he's not Corbyn. So look, Labour's clearly got permission to be heard with these voters. But yeah, look, there is clearly, you know, more that Keir Starmer needs to do to get through to them. And I think what's pretty clear from this focus group, and I think we had this last time as well, is that Labour isn't really cutting through. They're not really sort of, you know, putting ideas and sort of, you know, new propositions and a new position on the table that voters are sort of waking up to and looking at. Maybe this is a sign that if you're sitting in Labour HQ at the moment, you need to be thinking, well, let's do some slightly more off-piste, wacky things. Let's get Keir Starmer out and about a bit more, not just the usual, you know, safe visits, but actually he needs to be a bit more punchy to get these voters' attention.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's a toss-up, isn't there? He's got time until there's a general election, and lots of people on Twitter pointing out, what's the point of a focus group now when there's plenty of time to general election? However, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression often. And how people sort of come to view you early on, as Ed Miliband found, the thing that, you know, that hung around his neck the whole time, is this sense he'd sort of knifed his brother. That stuck to him amongst voters far more than actually many people in Westminster. If you like what you're hearing, you can listen to the whole of my Times Radio show, either listen back on the Times Radio app, or you can listen live Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. We'll have more on the episode after this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Even though there's not an election for four years or so, you tried to force the issue and ask them what they would do when presented with a direct choice between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer.
Do you know what? I don't know, because I'm actually a bit of a hypocrite, because I'm coming out with all this about Boris. I don't know enough on the other person to give an opinion, but I'm sort of blaming Boris. But at the same time, I didn't sort of know enough about him anyway. I just voted for him because, like, sort of just hearing conversations and things like that, he seemed to be the most popular that other people thought. So I think that really I should have looked into it a lot more than what I did.
It's a tough question. And as I said before, time will tell with Johnson. Okay. Not now. It's the worst is yet to come. I mean, we've got to get through unemployment. The economy's got to get back on its feet again. And how quickly is that going to happen?
I'll be honest, James, I don't really know too much about Keir, apart from he sounds like a Bond villain. His name's just cooler. But he has got a Bond villain sounding name, so I can't really cast too much opinion on him, to be honest, mate.
Like I said, I'm indifferent, but do you know what? Boris looks shattered, so I'd probably vote Keir just to see if he's got any energy.
Should number 10 be worried about that, do you think? This idea, James, that Boris Johnson looks tired and at least Keir looks like he might have a bit more energy?
Look, I think it links to what we heard about Boris earlier, you know, this slight sense of those things I think that number 10 view as, and certainly the public back at the last election viewed as Boris's strengths, you know, this sense of oomph, this sense of high energy, strength, he's going to get things done. That's what people repeated to me many, many times, particularly in those red wall seats. Look, I think so. Clearly, that has had a bit of an impact. I think they feel like Boris might have sort of slightly lost his mojo. I think it's salvageable, and I think the really clear thing here is they're not sort of immediately changing over to Keir Starmer. I mean, there's also a good corrective here for the Westminster bubble and politicians themselves. That, you know, however much people might try and, you know, hone manifestos and work out how to attract these voters, you know, that lady there really did say she was just making up her mind, you know, based on whether someone looked a bit tired. So look, there's some caution here, but it does feel like that reputation is slightly shifting. The other thing to say about Keir Starmer is actually the absence of what was discussed, which is that although they don't really know about him and they're not really taken by him, and, you know, apart from that his name sounds like a Bond villain, they don't have particularly strong views. There's no strong negative coming through. There's not a sense of weakness. I know number 10 of sort of, you know, MPMQs, Boris Johnson has tried to make this point that he's maybe flip-flops a lot. That doesn't really seem to be there. Nobody's criticising him for being a lawyer or being, you know, elitist or anything like that. So Labour can take that from this, that yes, he's not really registering, but he is still largely a blank slate with these voters.
In fact, when we did the focus group last month, the overwhelming message was it was probably a positive he was a lawyer. And then soon after that, Boris Johnson stopped attacking Keir Starmer for being a lawyer at PMQs. And in fact, I know the Labour Party listened to our last focus group, and we're quite intrigued by some of the findings from it. So I'm glad that we're helping everyone out. That's proper public service broadcasting. We should point out there was one politician who particularly impressed the panelist Sam.
The one person that probably would get my attention when they do talk now is Rishi Sunak. I think he's just captivating to watch because he's just such a good public speaker. Detailed, he explains everything. But I don't trust any politicians, I think they're the same.
To be described as captivating to watch, I mean, that's every politician's dream, isn't it, James?
It's remarkable stuff. I know we talked about this last month, but it is just overwhelming when you hear stuff like that in terms of, you know, how unprecedented that is in views of politicians. I mean, just before that lady said that, she was really bemoaning the entire political class, and then she swung on to Rishi Sunak. So, you know, it wasn't that I prompted about Rishi Sunak, you know, she really just did arrive there herself. So I think, you know, it really is very rare, and clearly I think you know, Rishi Sunak's political stock only seems to be going up rather than down.
Well, let's stick with Rishi Sunak's day job when he's not captivating the nation. As Chancellor, it's obviously his job to oversee the economy, and on that at least people were pretty gloomy.
It's going to take years upon years upon years to recover from this.
The level of borrowing is just going to be ridiculous, and it's going to have to be paid off one way, like taxes or, you know, cuts in spending. So not hopeful for the future.
I think what worries me is that there's an expectation somehow that we can continue to fund everything, whether it be investment funding, whether it be furlough funding or everything else. We can't, and we won't be able to. So we're going to have a much smaller economy with less taxing uptake. So it's going to take us 50 years to get through this, just like the war loans and all those sorts of things.
So it's not hugely positive about the economic prospects. And there was quite a long discussion in the focus group about people worried about their jobs and long-term unemployment and how things are going to get worse before they get better. You then asked them, James, about their support, you know, how we might get out of this, where money might have to be found from. There seemed to be a lot of support for taxing the wealthy, high earners and tech giants to pay for more spending on the NHS.
I actually do think there will have to be some form, call it what you like, but some form of wealth tax. I think that's inevitable. I think also that there'll be changes on self-employed national insurance contributions and tax structures.
I'd probably say corporation taxes, you know, these massive tech companies like Amazon, Apple, all of those, you know, a lot of them have only seen their market value go up during this pandemic. So I think they should have to contribute a bit more than they already do.
And also, well, I think a wealth tax as well, that the people who are earning over 100 grand a year can afford to pay a bit more tax, I think.
I just don't think it should be the people in the lower tax bracket. So the 20%ers, I don't think it should be them. I think it should be the higher net worth, the higher earners.
James Johnson's was former Downing Street pollster who carried out this focus group for us. James, did you, taxing rich people who aren't like me, is that basically a perennial of these focus groups?
It is to an extent, and certainly when we were doing research into whether, you know, when we thought we might have to raise tax to fund the NHS spending increase back in 2018, you know, we sort of very, very much found similar things to these. Of course, they don't necessarily raise huge amounts of money, of course, but it's sort of optical, and it makes a big difference to how fair people feel a tax increase is. I do think this has become more universal over time, though, and certainly the polling bears that out, that, you know, since the start of the decade, you know, people have become much keener to see tax increases like this. And it particularly matters for the Conservatives' electoral base now in the Red Wall. You know, their voters much more likely to want to see more government spending and higher tax. So, look, I think this is definitely something that people are going to be wanting to see. I think that, you know, it's interesting because, you know, they're not suggesting that all of the burden goes just on those big firms or just on those higher earners. They're aware of that. And actually, it's a really good corrective, some of this focus group, because a lot of people assume that, you know, voters just, you know, are quite happy with all the spending splurge and they're not thinking about the consequences. Actually, pretty much everyone in this group knew that debt was going to have to be paid off and that there were going to be long-term consequences. And equally on tax, you know, they're not suggesting that all of the tax burden should go on these firms. All they want is for it to feel fair and for the higher earners to pay a little bit more than they do. So I think, you know, if number 10, if the government were able to come to a position like that in the longer term, I think they would suddenly see their reputation really quite improving amongst voters like ours in this focus group.
Now, obviously, we shouldn't leave out the other parties. Let's hear what the focus group had to say about the Lib Dems.
Lib Dems. Well, they're a non-entity, aren't they? I think it's a two-party country now. There's not room for another party now.
Non-winner. Irrelevant.
Just think they sit on the fence, wishy-washy, no leadership.
Yeah, just a lack of trust and faith in them.
Don't know enough about them. I wouldn't ever think twice about voting for them.
I have no idea who any of them are. I couldn't name a Lib Dem MP.
Who is the leader at the moment?
I don't know.
No idea.
Ed Davey.
Oh.
Ed Davey is the leader at the moment.
And in fact, that chap went on to explain in some detail the fact that it was a joint leadership situation. You pressed them then on the Lib Dem leadership contest, which I think it's fair to say there wasn't a huge amount of awareness of. The really surprising thing about this is that it's not just that people don't pay any attention to politics. Listening to the whole focus group, they know lots of. Some knew the size of the GDP shrinkage in Italy. Others knew about the size of our national debt and individual ministers and so on. And yet the Lib Dems are just seen as not even sort of part of the universe.
No, and I think this is the brutal challenge of having 11 MPs and having very few MPs for the last 5 years. It's so difficult to cut through for political parties like this. I mean, you mentioned that Labour HQ listened to our last focus group. I mean, I actually kind of feel sorry for Lib Dem HQ if they're listening to that, because it's pretty brutal. And the interesting thing that is, though, is that people weren't really attacking. They didn't really have sort of strong views that there was a negative brand of the Lib Dems. They didn't sort of, you know, feel any particularly strong negative feelings towards them. They just felt they were irrelevant. And it's that challenge of being a small political party, just how you get news, how you get visibility. Because let's think about it, like, why would, you know, your average English swing voter hear anything about the Lib Dems? Why would you know who Ed Davey is or Leila Morin is? You know, you're probably not really seeing any news from them.
Thank you so much, James Johnson, there, carrying out our Times Radio focus group through polling firm Kex CNC. If you want to listen back to the last one, you can find that on the Red Box podcast. It's called Focus Pocus. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box podcast. You can now listen back to my whole show on the Times Radio app, where you can also now listen to all of the Times podcasts, including Red Box 2. Make sure you subscribe and review at the Red Box podcast wherever you listen. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.